They say rock and roll will never die. Well, that's what I've heard, at least. And while it's occasionally on life support and can be severely dehydrated, rock and roll does keep kicking along. So let's talk rock. Some amazing bands, some great band encounters, and a couple of tragedies along the way.
You are my density. You are my density.
I think a lot of us can find solace from music, no matter what kind of music you listen to. I used to go see a ton of bands back in like the, you know, early 90s to, you know, mid to late 2000s. It was kind of like a heyday of indie rock. And I still will occasionally like cart my ass out and go see a show. But it's kind of getting rarer and rarer these days as I go to bed kind of early and whatnot. But I did recently go see the band Unwound. It's a band from Washington from way back in the day. I think their first album was in 1994, but they're like a seminal band from, Washington on the label Kill Rock Stars. And seminal comes from the Latin semen or seed, meaning very influential or original. Kill Rock Stars, the founder was this guy Slim Moon. And I do some songs occasionally, crapola songs with my acoustic guitar, and I've sent a couple demos to them. No response, but hey, whatever. And we are all aging. I think we all are, unless you have a secret, and if so, let me know. But when I saw Unwound on their reunion tour this year, earlier this year, when the lead singer came out, I was just like, holy shit, we are aging, my brother. And I mean, he looked fine. He looked great. But it just was, you know, I think the last time I'd seen him, I was in my mid-20s, and it's been 25 years. And it was kind of a shock when you see, you know, that, you know, extreme change. So I was feeling pretty ancient in the audience, but the guy's still busting it out. He's still rocking. I think that they still all continue to do music. The lead singer had a side band after Unwound. And they did reunite recently, I think because of the death of their bassist. They had been talking to him about reuniting, and he had a lot of drinking problems and I think liver failure, and he actually died not too long ago. So that kind of really inspired them to just, let's do the tour. They got a different bassist and a side guitarist as well. And yeah, I mean, they're pretty, you know, they're a loud band, kind of some yelling and stuff, but they also have some pretty songs and a lot of melody even in the noise. One of my favorites is Lady Elect. It is, the ending is just incredible. I mean, I love the whole song. It's one of my favorite songs of theirs. Check that out if you can. But when I was maybe stoned, maybe 6 months ago, really stoned. And I was listening to the ending of the song, the last minute and a half. It's like a musical part for probably 2 hours straight. I was actually watching a live performance of it on my iPhone in my lap. I was so tripping that it's like, it almost seemed like I was in the venue, like watching the performance. And I just kind of zoomed in to the guitar for that little solo section, for that little instrumental section. And oh my God, it was like, I was like, this is the best piece of music ever. It's a great ending. It's a great song. Please check that out. And I used to film bands like back in Los Angeles, sometimes for this little website that I knew. And then also just for me sometimes. And I got a hold of Unwound through Kill Rock Stars. And I was like, hey, they were going to play at this little indie club called The Smell in downtown LA. And I was like, oh, you know, can I film you guys? You know, I have a few buddies that can help me. We'll actually shoot on film. And I emailed them and they wrote back and somebody was like, yeah, it's fine. And it was like from a girl, Sarah. And I was like, okay, cool. Can you, let me know if the band is totally okay with it? And then she wrote back. She's like, I'm in the band. It was the drummer, Sarah Lund. And I was like, oh my God, I'm a fucking idiot. But yeah, it was cool. The film turned out okay. I think I cut something together from it, but nothing ever came of it, but it was still fun to do. And anyway, the late bassist, Vern Rumsey, he was this, you know, tall, kind of intimidating guy. Very cool looking and a great bassist. And he actually played bass on one of my favorite band's albums. The band is Blonde Redhead. So anyway, I was working as a runner at this commercial editorial place in Hollywood. And I was driving around Hollywood and I was driving to Photochem, which was like, you know, we would drop off our film there. This was actually when they actually did commercials on film. It was like a film processing studio. And I was listening to my alma mater, Loyola Marymount's radio station, KXLU 88.9 FM. And I was just listening. I was driving there and I was like, what the hell is this song? Holy shit. And I kind of just stopped my car and just listened to the whole song. And then I called them up immediately. And I was like, what was that last song or the song before the last one? And they're like, it might have been Violent Life by Blonde Redhead. I was like, okay, cool. There was no Spotify. There was no internet, you know, really. So I went and bought the record a couple days later and just, wow, it blew me away. Pretty arty. This album was on Smells Like Records, which is Steve Shelley's label. He was in Sonic Youth. And yeah, it's a great song. I totally listen, check that out. And it's funny, when I drove to Photochem once, I was pulling in and then I saw this other girl pulling out, and it was actually Julie Delpy, this French actor and director. She was in those Beyond Sunrise movies with Ethan Hawke or whatever. But anyway, I was pulling in and she was doing some stupid shit and I was like yelling at her, and then she was yelling at me, and it's funny. I was just probably like, you fucking idiot. And then she was like yelling in French. It looked like, but it was just funny. So like a couple weeks later, I think I saw in the LA Weekly that Blonde Redhead was going to be playing Los Angeles. So I went to all three of their shows. I think it was Alligator Lounge, long ago closed. No Life Records, long ago closed. And lastly, Spaceland in Silver Lake. I think Spaceland is still around. And the band is like, it's just these two ultra hip, like Italian twins, super cool looking, and a Japanese girl. At the time, they actually had another guitarist, an Asian girl, but she's no longer in the band. But there weren't many people at the shows, and at Spaceland, I got there early, and it was just like, you know, they were just like sitting there drinking wine. There was maybe five people in the place, and he kind of walked over to me and he's like, "Oh, hey, I saw you at all of our shows. Do you you like the band?" Sorry, terrible Italian accent. And I was like, yeah, you guys are awesome. And so we exchanged information. This was before cell phones, and like, you know, he lived in New York. I wrote him. He wrote me back and he sent me like a couple of, 7 inches, like, you know, rare stuff. And we kind of, you know, became friends-ish. And, you know, when phones came around, we got each other's numbers. And, you know, we text each other once in a while, or I usually text him. But they still put me on the list. And very cool guys, very cool music. They've put out a ton of albums. I like kind of like a lot of the early ones. But some of the later ones are also cool. But I would check out Melody of Certain Damaged Lemons. That's got some great songs on it. And Vern Rumsey, the unwound bassist, played on Fate Can Be Just As Good. And there's an instrumental song on there called Futurism Versus Passéism, which is just an amazing song. Yeah, it's totally awesome. And they're Euro as hell, but like in the best possible way. And speaking of Euro, there's a song, Sensitive Euro Man, by Pavement. And all roads leave back to Pavement. Pardon the pun. I bought the cassette Slanted and Enchanted in Berkeley, California in 1989. I totally fell for it. I wasn't really into music, you know, that much back then, I just kind of listened to what I thought I should. I was like, oh, Iron Maiden. Okay, I'll listen to them. Didn't really enjoy it. I listened to some like DOA and Black Flag and Dead Kennedys, just, I don't know, trying to be some punk, but never really liked it. But this was like a different music. And I was like, wow, this is weird, but amazing. And back to Euro, they do have an amazing song called Sensitive Euro Man. Pavement does. It's kind of like, Sensitive Euro Man, we're so envious of your etiquette demands, until we saw you lost in the dark without your bright ideals. They just have some super clever lyrics. Stephen Malkmus is an amazing guitarist. The whole band is great. Another great one is Silence Kid. And it goes, Silent Kid, no one to remind you, you got no heel, no reels to remind you. Silent Kid, don't take your pawn shop home on the road, and goddamn you. So please check out Pavement, please. They have a ton of albums, a ton of songs. If you don't like them, okay, that's cool. But if you do like them, you are in for a treat. And a lot of people love Pavement, so it's no secret here. But funny story, I was on a date, and I went to this dive bar on Santa Monica Boulevard called Dell's Saloon. I think it's now Mom's or something, but anyway, it's not as good. But it used to be a total dive, and they did karaoke a lot. And I was just, you know, totally drunk as hell. And I did some song, and I kind of like, you know, was holding the microphone really close to my mouth, and I was just yelling, and it was probably obnoxious as hell. But anyway, after I was done, some guy came up to me, and he was like, "Hey, man, that really reminded me of Stephen Malkmus." The lead singer of Pavement. And I was like, oh man, I love Pavement. They're like one of my favorite bands. And he's like, really? I'm actually the bassist's brother. And I was like, shut the hell up. You know, show me your ID. Cause I knew the guy's name was Mark Eibold, the bassist. And so he showed me his driver's license. Last name was Eibold. And I was just like, oh man, that's amazing. So, and I'm kind of tall. I'm like, you know, 6'3" and, you know, don't really look like Stephen Malkmus, but I have a, you know, kind of a similar vibe. But anyway, that was like very fun. It made me feel good for about a year. And one of my absolute favorites, and everyone's favorites probably, is the dearly missed Elliott Smith, who became popular while living in Portland, Oregon. The bulk of his albums were on Kill Rock Stars, but he had a couple of great albums on a major label, DreamWorks, EXO and Figure Eight. He is just, you know, I mean, this guy has so prolific, and his songs are amazing. Lyrics are great and gut-wrenching and sad. And he just, like, was a super sensitive and, you know, pretty sad guy with a lot of demons and drug problems and whatnot, but he just seemed like a sweet guy, like whenever I saw him in concert, you know. Saw him several times, and probably the first two or three, man, it was just one of the best experiences musically I've ever seen. It was just like he was on top of it. You know, the music was so solid, amazing guitar player, the lyrics and the singing, it was just spot on. I wouldn't have missed it for the world. Saw him a couple times acoustic, a few times electric. And yeah, just like one of those experiences I'll never forget, seeing him like in his prime. So many great songs. I mean, Say Yes is one of the classics. I'm in love with the world through the eyes of a girl who's still around the morning after. And I had like a alarm clock in the mid 90s, and it was like you could play a CD on it. And so you could play a CD to wake you up. So for like probably 2 years, my wake up song on the CD was Coming Up Roses by Elliott Smith. I just loved the lyric and, you know, waking up and coming up, blah, 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 blah. But it goes like, well, the moon does its division, you're buried below, and you're coming up roses everywhere you go, red roses follow. And one more that kind of just always hit me is I Figure You Out. The lyrics are kind of about, you know, a girl that he likes or something like that. And it just, you know, he kind of had not the greatest luck with women and was just so shy, which I can totally relate to. And anyway, that one kind of goes, I've seen you watching her every time she crosses the floor. So won't you just go and talk to the one you really adore? And when he played electric, his really close friend, Sam Coombs, the musician, would play bass. He's in a great band called Quasi with Janet Weiss. She's the drummer for Sleater-Kinney. It's just him and her. She plays drums. He plays like organ or guitar. And they were actually once a couple. But just, you know, really funny lyrics. The guy is super clever. Kind of a depressive, kind of like Elliott Smith. But yeah, just kind of poppy as shit and so catchy. And I visited Seattle once while on vacation. I went and saw Kurt Cobain's house where he killed himself. And actually at the top of Capitol Hill, there's a cemetery with Bruce Lee and Brandon Lee. They're buried right next to each other. And I don't know, I was walking around looking at a newspaper, like maybe, I don't know what it's called, Seattle Weekly or something like that. But I was looking at the music section and I saw a great review of this Quasi album featuring Birds. I hadn't yet heard Quasi. And I went and bought it in Seattle and oh shit, it was another one of those like moments where you're like, okay, this is going to change my life, this band. It's like, this is unlocking forever joy. Totally poppy, catchy, amazing. One of the songs on featuring Birds is called California. And it goes, life is dull, life is gray. At its best, it's just okay. But I'm happy to report, life is also short. So yeah, he had those kind of like depressing lyrics, but were much more humorous than Elliott Smith. Another one on a separate album is called It's Raining. And it goes, It's raining, it's raining. There's nothing you can do. It doesn't only rain on you, but you're acting all upset like you're the only one who's wet. Again, you kind of get the gist, but yeah. If please listen to some Quasi, and again, if you like it, you're in for a treat. And so back when I was doing some videos for bands, I was doing this little short video for a website on this band, Whiskey Biscuit. And so I went to film them at Spaceland. And anyway, I was taping them. And then until I looked over the right, I mean, it's Elliot Smith standing there by himself watching the band. And I was just like, holy shit. Interesting side note. Beck's girlfriend at the time cheated on him with a member of Whiskey Biscuit. Which, you know, they were okay, not a great band, but it's just like, you're going to cheat on Beck with some idiot from Whiskey Biscuit? I mean, first of all, don't cheat on anybody. If you do, tell him immediately. He found out through some, like, email. I think he came back from tour and saw the email, and he, you know, broke up with her, kicked her out. Kind of screwed him up. His album Sea Change is kind of all about heartbreak and whatnot. You know, I think that was, you know, at least one of the loves of his life, this girl. But yeah, I mean, there's no reason to cheat on people. Then get the fuck out of the relationship. I mean, I don't know. That's just one thing that's just always, I've never even contemplated. But yeah, Beck is also great. And one of his amazing songs, it's on an earliest album on K Records. It's called Cyanide Breath Mint, with the amazing opening lyrics. Definitely this is the wrong place to be. There's blood on the futon. There's a kid drinking fire. And the founder of K Records is Calvin Johnson. And it's just like a legendary label. Kurt Cobain actually had a K Records tattoo on his arm. So anyway, back to Elliot Smith. I looked over and I was like, hey, I love your music. Can I interview you, you know, about Whiskey Biscuit for this little video? And he was like, yeah, sure. So we went outside. He seemed really tired, you know, but he was, you know, it seemed like in a good mood. He had said he was like, I don't know, he just came back from tour or he's jet lagged or something. But yeah, just a super sweet guy. I interviewed him out in front of the club. And he just, you know, said how much he liked the band, and they kind of had like a wall of sound kind of thing going on. And just seemed like a gentle guy. And, you know, you could tell he was, you know, somewhat haunted. And it was just a great experience to speak with him and see that he was like, you know, so nice. The last couple shows I saw him at weren't so great. There was one at Sunset Junction, which is like a concert they do at the corner of like Sunset and something. They shut off a couple blocks. And he showed up late. He was the main event. He showed up late and he had like cornrows and just, it was just a mess. I mean, he was like kind of slurring his lyrics, or not even slurring them, just like the words. He would fuck up the words. So you're just like, okay, this guy is definitely on something. And I actually said to my friend, literally, I was like, my God, he needs to either like clean up or kill himself, because this is not good. This is a train wreck. And the final show I saw him at was like a Kinks tribute. It was at the Derby, a club on Los Feliz Boulevard, now closed. He was reportedly clean at the time, and he was clean when he died. He just seemed pretty drained. He looked really tired, worn out, you know, was still doing good music and playing, but he just seemed done with the world. And he did end up killing himself not too long after that. He stabbed himself twice in the heart. And I mean, I get it when people are just miserable and, you know, they're just finished with life. You always hope people can find some kind of reason to keep going. But I totally understand. I think we've all thought about, like, you know, not waking up, or if we weren't around, you know, sometimes it would make things a lot easier. But you just always hope somebody finds the reason, or just like, okay, I can, you know, I can kill myself tomorrow. Let's get through the day. There was some mystery over his death. There was like, you know, two stabs to his heart, and I don't know, he spelled his first name wrong on the suicide note, and there was no hesitation wounds, blah, blah, blah. But I don't know, the autopsy couldn't rule out homicide, but I mean, the guy seemed like a walking, you know, suicide risk. He just, you know, he just seemed sad, seemed like it was inevitable. And what's even more tragic, thinking about what I said to my friend at that Sunset Junction show, I said, you know, he's got to kill himself or get clean. Well, at the end, he did both. He was clean when he died. He had no, like, you know, illicit drugs in his system, which is almost even more heartbreaking because the guy was trying. The guy was trying his best to stay clean, and it just, there was no happiness there. And I think he knew he couldn't continue with the drugs because that was just, you know, dulling him and making him a mess. So he was trapped. You know, the life of a junkie wasn't working and the life of a clean person wasn't working. So it's like, goddamn. But, yeah. And there's a song called True Love, which was released posthumously. It has these tragic ending lyrics. I feel cold, useless and old. I wish I was no one. Take me up, my Lord. Take me up today. Take me out of this place. Take me up with you today. So I hope he is somewhere where he's happy now. And, you know, he's definitely missed and people love his music and I will never stop listening to his music. And I'm going to end this episode soon. Just one more, you know, kind of sad story. Laura, I mentioned her a few episodes ago. I dated her a couple times and when I was, whatever, leaving her house, the front end of my car fell off. And she actually lived on Los Feliz Boulevard, off of Los Feliz Boulevard, which is where the Derby was at the last time I saw Elliot Smith, the show, the King Show. And so anyway, I was going to leave LA in 2015. I'd sold my place and I was going to go to nursing school and I was kind of letting people know. And I hadn't talked to her for a few months, so I was going to text her. I even started to write the text, I think, you know, hey, how's it going? I'm leaving LA, going to be a nurse. How you doing? And then I just, for some reason, didn't send it. And I went to dinner with a couple friend of mine. They actually set me up with her. And anyway, when we were into the dinner and I was just like, hey, how's Laura doing? And they were like, yeah, didn't you hear? And I literally said, did she kill herself? And they were like, yeah, she hung herself. And I remember, you know, they told me about it. And, you know, I remember in the apartment, I know where she hung herself. And it was just, it just took me aback. It still messes with my head. The fact that I didn't text her that day kind of drives me nuts a little bit. Not that that would have changed anything, but you know, it's like from now on, if I think of texting someone that I haven't talked to in a long time, it's like, I'm just going to text them. Fuck it. You know, maybe that text would have helped her with that day. And if somebody had texted her the next day, again, I'm not blaming myself or anything, but, you know, I just should have said hi. And yeah, I still think about her. We weren't super close, but you know, I mean, suicide is just, it's the ultimate kind of mind fuck or whatever. It just, it's almost like a spiritual ghosting or something. You can get, there's no more contact with that person. It's just, you know, you just have the memories and good memories, bad memories. And it's just, you know, you just wish again that they would have found a way to, you know, get through that terrible week or month or year and, you know, keep going. Yeah, the brain just, it's hard to compute suicide. I can't imagine if it was someone super, super close to you. I mean, that would be just almost unbearable. And I still have her phone number in my phone. It's like, I'm never going to erase it. It's kind of like just, you know, it's my tribute to her and it just would feel wrong to kind of erase her name. So I hope she is in a better place. So I know this podcast started out about music and kind of ended in a dark spot. But here's a couple quotes on just death and those who leave us before their time. There's a great one from the poet playwright Edna St. Vincent Millay about people who have died, you know, at very, you know, a young age or just before they were supposed to. My candle burns at both ends. It will not last the night. But ah, my foes and oh, my friends, it gives a lovely light. And then there's an amazingly deep quote from Keanu Reeves. He actually experienced quite a bit of heartbreak in his life. His girlfriend and him had a stillborn daughter, and then they broke up, and his ex-girlfriend actually died in a really tragic car accident. But anyway, someone asked him what happens after we die, and he said, I know the ones who love us will miss us, you know, which is kind of beautiful and you know, very true. So let's end on a Elliott Smith lyric that I would like to remember him by and everyone that I know who has passed. It's from the song Happiness, and it goes, that all I want now is happiness for you and me. All I want now is happiness for you and me.